Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In today's program, Ravi Kanbar on the political dimensions of data and statistics.
One important question is whether the numbers correspond to the felt reality. The statistical offices come out and say that poverty has gone down, let's say, but the people on the ground say, well, you know, we don't feel as though it has. So that's an example of how our statistics may be incomplete.
Ravi Kanbar is T.H. Lee Professor of World Affairs and Professor of Economics at Cornell University. He was the keynote speaker at the IMF's fourth statistical forum held in November on statistics for inclusive growth. To get a sense of when governments started using statistics to form policy, Kanbar delved into the history of data collection in India under British colonial rule.
And one of the things I noted was that data actually were very important to the British as a management device. And actually the India office, the civil service office in London, which was charged with administering India, had to produce lots and lots of statistics and records on revenue, on expenditure, on infrastructure, etc. But also actually on social conditions as well. And in particular, they had to produce a report every year to Parliament. This is throughout the latter part of the 19th century and right up to independence, on something called material and moral progress in India, which was essentially a combination of economic reporting and social dimensions of development, if you like, social dimensions of well-being. And this was partly a management tool, but also, I think, partly a tool to justify colonial rule. And actually, the 1906-1907 version of that report was produced by none other than John Maynard Keynes, one of the world's greatest economists ever. In fact, Keynes's first job out of university was in the statistical office of the India office. Keynes never went to India, but he knew a lot about Indian statistics because he managed this process of actually putting together this report for British Parliament.
And so given that this statistical report was to be presented to Parliament, how much influence did politics have in the data collection process? And have we gotten over that, or are we still today looking at data that's politically skewed?
Oh, well, there's no question about it. And certainly, in my mind, there's no question about it. And although the British colonial rulers used statistics for their purposes, by the same token, those who were fighting for Indian independence used actually the same statistics for their purposes. Not just the same statistics, they actually set up mechanisms of collecting their own statistics, conducting their own household surveys, actually, amongst poor communities in India so that they could make the case that actually British rule was not benefiting the population, and therefore there was a justifiable argument for independence. And this tendency was actually very strong and was ingrained and took root and was actually rooted by the time India got independence. So the leaders, the post-independence leaders, were actually very much in favor of having statistics, in particular statistics on the well-being of the population, because they had fought for that. They had fought for independence on the basis of that argument. But the production of statistics on poverty, for example, is never just a technical act. It is always a political act as well, because it lands into a political arena, and whatever statistics are produced are part of a national debate. And technical issues of the design of surveys, etc., become political because the outcomes of those technical decisions have political consequences.
So we currently live in a world where essentially virtually every decision or strategy is based on some kind of data, you know, including poverty, as you just mentioned. And given what you're saying, do we really know how many poor people there are in the world?
So again, I think this is a very important point also. So that, you know, again, if we go back to the technical aspects of household surveys, and there's a long tradition of this, and people have worked long and hard on this, and they produce these numbers. But one important question is whether the numbers correspond to the felt reality on the ground. And this has always been a big question. So the statistical offices come out and say that poverty has gone down, let's say. But the people on the ground say, well, you know, we don't feel as though it has. So what's going on in this world? Well, there could be a number of things that are going on. One is that we are actually missing some aspects in our household survey. I'll give you an example. You know, things like health, things like whether the health post in the village has enough medicines to go around, are actually not very well captured in our household surveys. What we capture is how much have you spent on fish, how much have you spent on rice, how much have you spent on this. That we're quite good at capturing. But non-market items, like medicine in the government health post, we're not that good at capturing in our household surveys. So suppose, in fact, we're in a world in which the government cuts public health services. That won't show up necessarily in our standard official measures, but the people will be feeling it on the ground. So that's an example of how our statistics, certainly our household survey statistics, may be incomplete. And I think, you know, many politicians have, and indeed statisticians have been shocked by the reaction of the population in voting, in rioting, and so on, when the statistics seem to be suggesting, well, look, you know, things are not that bad.
Hmm. So, in your presentation to the Statistical Forum, you talked about how the way that we collect household data can lead to an overall underreporting of inequality. How does that work?
Yes, I think this is a very big question. And it's one which is in some sense a silent issue because people don't realize that it's going on. Inequality within the household is something which is ever present, but seems to be not very much remarked upon. And the reason is very simple, is that when we do household surveys, as the name suggests, we collect information on expenditure and consumption at the household level. Okay? We collect information on health, education, etc., at the individual level. We say, how many years of schooling does this child have? What is the health status of this person, and so on? That's fine. But when it comes to our headline measures of poverty, which are all to do with monetary measures of poverty, all to do with consumption-based measures of poverty, you simply ask the household respondent, what was the household's consumption of fish, of rice, etc.? And you add all these things up. And suppose, just to take a number, the total comes to 10,000. And there are five members in the household. Well, you don't have information on each individual's consumption. You only have the total consumption measure. And the standard practice, I know there are variations, but the basic standard practice is to assume that every member of the household gets an equal share. Mm-hmm. Because there's nothing else we can do. We have no other information than that. Okay? Even though other bits of information, like on health and education, tell us there's a problem with this way of doing it, in the area of monetary poverty, monetary measurement of poverty, we have no other option but to assume equality within the household. So we're understating inequality within the household, and therefore we're understating inequality in the nation as a whole. There's not that much work done on it, but I have argued in my work that when you look at different studies, roughly speaking, there's a 30% understatement of inequality and of poverty. So one of the things I say, every time you see an inequality number, every time you see a poverty number, multiply it by 1.3, scale it up by 30%. That I would say is an example of how our data are getting things wrong in terms of inequality and poverty.
Do you think that the world is ready to admit that the data is inherently problematic or inherently flawed, in fact? And what do you think would be the consequences if we do admit that the data is wrong to a certain extent?
I think certainly amongst analysts there's an openness to recognizing that there are issues. Tony Atkinson, one of the world's leading authorities on income distribution and poverty, has just produced a report, and a number of these data issues are listed actually in that report. So a fairly open discussion. And I'll just give you yet another example. population estimates from around the world are highly, highly variable and suspect and so on. And, you know, getting, say, take the population of Nigeria, okay? And there could be, you could be off by 10, 20 million there. And therefore, if you're off by 10, 20 million, your estimate of world of certainly Nigerian poverty could be off. And then your estimate of African poverty could be off. And then your estimate of world poverty could be off. So many of these questions are issues are actually are recognized by the Atkinson Commission, for example, including actually this intra-household inequality issue that I mentioned. So it's not, I don't think it's for want of recognition of these issues. I suppose you could say it could be a resource problem, that actually correcting these things would take a lot of resources. But also, I suppose, maybe if certain ways of collecting data produce the answers that certain groups want, then there may not be that much of a push to change those ways of collecting the data.
In other words, there's still a political element to this.
There's always a political element.
How valuable do you think that forums like this, where a lot of people from a lot of countries, a lot of people in the field get together and talk about the issues, how valuable do you think that discussion is towards trying to address some of these issues?
Well, discussion is always valuable. And there are many, many meetings of this type where statisticians get together and so on. But I think this particular meeting at the IMF, I think, is significant, because not only is it about statistics, but it is about statistics on inclusive growth. Mm. And the fact that the IMF is convening a meeting on inclusive growth, I think, is highly significant and actually, I think, highly important, I think. I myself, in the past, have been a huge critic of the IMF, but I think it's quite remarkable that in the last 3 years, 5 years, a leading voice on the inequality in growth, on the detrimental effects of inequality in and of itself, but also on growth, has actually been the research work of the IMF. So I think it's in that context to have the statistics department of the IMF call a World Statistics Forum, not on balance of payment statistics, which you might expect, not on inflation statistics, which you might expect, not even on GDP statistics, which you might expect from the IMF, but on statistics on inclusive growth, including household surveys, etc. These types of initiatives, I think, are to be welcomed.
That was Ravi Kanber, Ph.D. Professor of World Affairs and Professor of Economics at Cornell University. You can watch the webcast of Kanber's keynote speech at the IMF's Fourth Statistical Forum at imf.org. You can also hear more podcasts while you're there, or search for IMF Podcasts on your favorite podcast app.